This is the Empowered Caregiver Show. If you are a caregiver or know someone who is, this show is meant to uplift you through education and support, while also lifting up every caregiver's invaluable role in society. Now, here is the Empowered Caregiver and your host, Liza Helen Brand.
Hello, everyone. I am your host, Liza Helen Brand, and you are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I am doing a first ever show live from Washington, D.C. Technical challenges left and right, mostly going on my end. Everybody else is cool and calm as a cucumber, but I don't know what I'm doing. But thank you for joining me today. I have an action-packed show with a lot of super great guests. I am going to start out with Harriet Redman, who is the founder of WisconsinSibs, an organization up in the Fox Valley. Is that correct? The Fox Valley area that supports siblings that have a brother or sister with a disability. And how long have you been doing that, Harriet?
Oh, well, my son was born in 1992. And so I've been thinking about it since he was born. He has an older sister. She was 3 when he was born. And his diagnosis kind of started me thinking about the impact on siblings.
So it's been a while and a wonderful asset to our state. My son has participated in some of your camps in the past, and I love the work that you do and have done with Sib Shops, but that's actually not why I have you here today, because that's not the only work that you do, Harriet. You kind of do it all. And what I would like to talk to you about is the work that you have done with the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Alliance. Did I get that right out of the gate? Okay.
Caregiver Support Alliance.
Alliance. Yeah. I knew I was missing something. I don't have my notes in front of me. So, yes. So the work that you are doing through the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance, there is a subgroup, which is employer engagement. So what is really important to you and to myself as well is letting employers know about the caregivers that are in their place of work and what their needs are and how that they can support them, right? So we don't lose them. So you were able to put together, I know there were a lot of people involved in this, but I am giving you the credit when you were the mastermind behind it and doing all the talking and made this wonderful HR toolkit for employers. And you had the opportunity to present at the SHRM conference a few weeks ago. And I can't recall offhand what SHRM stands for, but not important. The important part is it was a huge HR conference for people working in the HR industry throughout the state of Wisconsin. So you put together the HR toolkit, had some wonderful speakers there, and I just want to circle back with you. I haven't been able to talk to you since that event and just see how it went. And then also, well, actually, I want to start out from your words, why you felt or why you think it's important that employers recognize the needs of caregivers. So let's start there, Harriet.
Well, there's a couple of different angles on that. One is the angle from the caregivers themselves. 40% of family caregivers also have full-time jobs. So they need the income. It's important to their well-being. It's important not only from the financial perspective, but also, you know, we all gain something from work. And so from a caregiver perspective, it's important that their employers kind of get them and understand what they need. From an employer's standpoint, there's all kinds of reasons that it's important for them to understand the needs of caregivers and how many they have in their companies, whether they're a small business or a huge corporation. It's important because they need to retain those employees. They don't want to lose employees. Actually, what employers are telling us when they have benefits and they understand the needs of caregivers, it's very attractive. So attracting employees is a key outcome for businesses.
Definitely. And there's so many people that are having a hard time hiring. I think that if you can identify yourself as being caregiver friendly, it is a no-brainer. I was actually surprised today there was a woman from, I cannot think of the name of the company, but it's a pharmaceutical company. They have over 30,000 employees. I don't know if it's nationwide, countrywide, but they are really taking on this caregiver initiative in a large way. And they have paid family leave, which is something that we're fighting for here. And the caregivers still are not using it because they don't want their employer to know that they're a caregiver, that it'll impact, you know, their career possibilities, advancement down the line. So I was kind of shocked by that, that here's a company that's really paving the way on a large scale. And, you know, I guess the point of it for me is this is something that really needs to come from the top down, right?
It does. Yes. And the top down, what they can do is create a culture where caregiving is not taboo, that caregivers are going to take the time off to get done what they have to get done, whether it is paid leave or they take vacation days. You know, one out of four caregivers haven't had a vacation in over a year because they're taking their vacation days to provide care. So employers who get ahead of that and open that conversation and have that open communication where the culture in the organization is to not only share, but then help one another, they're going to retain their employees. Almost 40%, in some studies, it's even larger. Caregivers will leave a company if they can't sustain their employment. But if an employer can help them sustain their employment, they're both going to win. The employer is going to see higher productivity. They're going to reap back what they have invested in those caregivers, because caregivers need them, but they will leave and find an employer who's more attractive to get what they need.
And that's such an excellent point. And it kind of leads into my next question for you. But, you know, when employers hear the word benefits, I'm sure the first thing that comes to mind is dollar signs. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. What is this going to cost me? And one thing to keep in mind is what you just said. Well, what is it going to cost you if you don't do it? Because if you don't support these caregivers, they're leaving, and then you're spending money finding new employees and training and the just mm-hmm. the advertising costs for finding new employees. Somebody mm-hmm. that's kind of worked in that field is can be extremely high and lost productivity, and you know, it goes on and on. So it's really in their benefit to help support family caregivers. But you know, in regards to the dollar signs that may have them running in the opposite direction, in this toolkit that you created, what are some of the low cost or no cost things that employers can do, you know, right out of the gate to make a difference?
You bet. One of the things that we presented at the SHRM conference, which is the human resources professionals professional conference, is that there's lots of free local support. The Aging and Disability Resource Center, and lots of different organizations that will provide not only information directly to employees, but they will come and make presentations for a company. So that's one of our number one, is a company can reach out and for no cost, have experts come in and provide information, connect employees with providers in order to not only provide information, but also relieve some of that stress and unknown for caregivers. So education is number one, and it's very inexpensive. A lot of organizations have also started posting on their website or other newsletters information from caregivers about what they need so that other employees can step up and maybe do some lawn mowing or maybe bring a meal and provide support to caregivers.
What an easy and meaningful fix if there's somebody that is really struggling with something, you know, as basic as needing a meal, getting the yard mowed, walking a dog, and there's people out there that'll do it. I mean, that's the biggest thing. There's a lot of great, wonderful people out there willing to help if they knew. And, you know, we always advocate for caregivers to advocate for themselves, right? To allow people to help you, to let people help you. But if an employer has that volunteer board or however they want to post it, sticky notes on a cork board, old school style, what an easy step.
And I think a lot of employers are finding that they may not know exactly how many caregivers there are in their company. They may not even know who it is. But even in that session, we asked the HR professionals, you know, have you ever been a caregiver? Are you a caregiver? Do you expect to be a caregiver in the next 2 years? 100% of the hands went up. That was just HR people. And it's true. Caregivers are in those companies, even if they don't know who they are. And if they start offering education, resource fairs, volunteer boards, things like that, they will find them. Those caregivers will show up, and they will be very impressed with their own companies, and productivity will go up.
Yep. Harriet, you've done such amazing work on so many different fronts. You're like my idol, who I aspire to be. And so thank you so much for your time tonight and sharing what you did at the conference. And fingers crossed, it really makes a difference because it's needed. Next up, we will be talking to Kim Feist after this short commercial break about employing people with disabilities. Are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and I am your host, Liza Hallenbrand, broadcasting today live from Washington, D.C. Fingers crossed, no more technical difficulties, although I just spilt a whole bottle of water, but that's all right. Next up is Kim Feist from Feist Vocational Agencies. Thank you so much, Kim, for joining me today. Well, first of all, did I get that right? Is it Feist Vocational Agency?
Feist Vocational Counseling and Placement.
Close enough. Close enough for government work. Okay. So thank you, Kim, for joining me today. And I wanted to have you on because we are in the final days of, hopefully I get this right as well, National Disability Employment Awareness Month. I believe is how it goes. All right. Woohoo! Two for two. And so I've had a lot of people on this month talking about employment and working, and I had people with disabilities on. You may know one of them. Mr. Caden Crute came on and told about his employment at Marcus Theater. So I just wanted to see if I can find my notes here. I just wanted to ask you, actually, you know what I wanted to start out with is, how long have you been supporting people with disabilities in the workplace?
Yeah, our agency has been open and operating for about 12 years now. So, okay. But I've been doing it for about 15.
Okay. And then what types have of changes have you seen during the years? I was just curious about that because I know in, you know, I would say the past 5 years or so, there's been more push, more awareness, more supports out there for people with disabilities to have meaningful employment. So I was just curious how you've seen things evolve or change, either for good or for bad, over your time in the industry.
Yeah, I've absolutely seen a huge just initiative and an awareness. And I really credit it to a lot of the large corporate businesses coming out and really explaining the benefits, because I think there's so many benefits. I've seen agencies and businesses just be more open, more creative, and just seeing the benefits of working with people with disabilities.
That is wonderful, and I just hope that it continues to grow. I shared a little bit a few weeks ago about my experience with my son, Caden, and him entering his world of employment. And I think when he was, you know, the day he turned 14, he was like 14 years old and 14 years and 2 minutes old. I just pulled him by his ear and dropped him off at your doorstep and said, "Get this lad a job." So I know not all caregivers, our parents are like that, but I'm curious what you would tell a caregiver or a parent about things that they could be doing at home or things that they could be doing in the community to advance their person that they're caring for to have the ability to get a job when that time comes.
Yeah. Well, I think what you did is great. So I applaud you because starting young, you know, when everyone else gets their first jobs, 15, 16, it's so important for people with disabilities to also have that same experience. So I share with caregivers to get help with that. There's a lot of local resources like the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, or talk to your guidance counselors and really say, you know, my student is interested in working, where do I start? And then also reaching out to your connections. Do you have any friends or neighbors that have businesses that they could help out in some part, even just on a part-time basis or project basis? Working is just such a good thing, provides structure, confidence, and just a social awareness. So starting young is the best thing that I would recommend.
Well, and you know, one thing that came to mind for me that we did is before my son was old enough to work, we had him volunteer. We had him volunteer at the senior center, and he wiped down wheelchairs and shower aids and all of that jazz. But, you know, he had a structured time that he had to be there. He had his tasks. He had someone to report to. So that was just an easy first step at 13 years old to just gain some experience and have something to put on his resume. What would you suggest, or actually, can you walk me through this process? Like I said, I kind of dropped my son off at your door and said, put him to work. But what does it look like when somebody gives you a call and says, "Hey, I have a son or daughter with a disability. I would like for them to seek employment." What does that process look like?
Yeah, so our agency really approaches it from two different angles. We first approach it from career exploration. So we want to expose individuals to what types of careers are out there based on their interests and the labor market. And then also from a skill building level. And so we really want to establish those foundational skills on how to fill out an application, how to make a resume, how to follow up with employers, how to interview, and all of those necessary skills. And so, you know, we kind of go into both of those areas and find that first opportunity if it is a job shadow or an internship or getting their first job. And then once they do find that job, we really help them through that process of on-site job coaching. We help them develop a task list, develop natural supports and good, healthy relationships with their supervisors and coworkers, and just ensure that they develop the skills to be successful at their job.
That's wonderful. And I remember, Caden, taking a lot of, you have a lot of great offerings and summer programs to help students prepare, get ready to enter the workforce. Can you tell me, though, on the employer end of it, what are some of the myths or the concerns that you come up against?
Yeah, I think it's kind of that elephant in the room, like they don't know how to approach it. And so having an expert or a vocational counselor really remove that stigma and talk about it openly, like how someone learns best or how they can be a supportive employer or what job may be the best fit. That's really our role to help it be a win-win for the employer and then also for our client for it to be successful for both. And so, and then once they have like one of those amazing success stories, we always get a call from the business and say, hey, we'd love to have more clients or more job seekers. So that's always positive.
Oh, I bet, because we say they're there, they're on time, they're reliable, they're not going anywhere, they're hardworking, they take pride in what they do. There are so many wins in the, you know, checks in the win column. It just makes beautiful sense. Thank you so much, Kim, for spending time with me today and sharing that, and for all the great work that you do. You've helped me and my son Caden out so much in his employment journey, and I'm so thankful that I have you in my we don't call it Rolodex now, do we? We call it cell phone. I got you in my contacts, so I know where to find you. And yeah, I appreciate what you do. Both of you, both Kim Nunn from Feist Vocational Agency and Harriet Redman. We'll be back after this short break. You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand, live today from Washington, D.C. I have got one more, I guess we could call him guest. I like to call him my bellboy, my baggage carrier, but the one and only Michael Kroot from the Devil's Advocates is joining me today to help with the gear, and I also drug him on air so we can have this conversation about what I've been up to today.
Can I start by saying I'm proud. I'm your plus one.
Yes.
National Caregiver Conference here at the Royal Sonesta Capitol Hill. It's a big deal.
It is a big deal. So the official name, I believe, is the Caregiver Summit 2023. So
it's on every billboard inside this hotel. It's all over the place.
It has been a long day. All right.
You caregivers are running this joint today.
We are. We're everywhere. And that's awesome. We need to be seen and we need to be heard. So we should be everywhere. So yes, it is the first ever.
Oh, really?
First ever national.
The inaugural.
Yes. Caregiver Summit. And so I was trying to think about the easiest way to explain this because I feel like...
Well, what'd you do? Tell people what you did so they know what this summit looks like. Because I have not seen you all day, hon, and I would like to know, what were the day's events like?
Well, today was just a lot of information and a lot of learning. So tomorrow I'm going to be going up to the Capitol and speaking with
the nation's capital,
which, okay, it's big. It's big, like the ground floor, right? This is my first time here.
Yes.
Yes. But the Capitol part?
Rotunda? Very much resembles the Wisconsin Capitol Rotunda. And then there's that statue on the top. Lady Forward is gold, and this is more of a bronze black, and it says E Pluribus Unum.
Fair enough. But I thought it would be much grander. I know it's a little...
It's pretty damn grand.
I don't want to say bad things about the nation's
monuments are beautiful.
Yes, it is. It's beautiful. And the weather's beautiful.
Getting our steps.
We're getting our steps. We have 16,000 steps yesterday. So, yes, beautiful place. But time today, we did some training because I will be going to the Capitol tomorrow, and I have appointments with Mark Pocan, who I know you saw today.
I sweetened him up for you.
Thank you for that. Tammy Baldwin, Ron Johnson.
I'm not sweetening Ron.
I know, and who is that other guy?
Derek Van Orden from the third CD.
Yep. Gonna bite.
Derek may not be attending.
No, we'll be talking to staffers. But, you know, we have been well educated and informed that they take this job seriously. And there was people there that were staffers, and they're like, we run the show. Yeah. Like, we got to know they don't. Yes.
Oh, clearly. So, they run their Congress people's schedule.
Right.
And here, I'll give you a couple insights, baby. You won't be going to the Capitol per se, although you might walk by. You'll go to one of the congressional buildings. There are three of them. Or you'll go over to the Russell Senate building. I believe that's where Ron Johnson's office is. Mm-hmm. But the actual offices are separate from the Capitol building.
Right.
That's different than the Wisconsin Capitol. And I got to go over to the Longworth building today. And it was pretty cool. I got to go to Pocan's office. I know you are going to love Pocan's office, because here's what it says right on the front door.
Dogs welcome?
Oh, dogs welcome. There was a big golden lab in the interview. I got to interview Mark right after the new Speaker of the House was elected, and there was a golden Labrador. One of his staffers' dog was in, and there's a picture one of his staff took of the dog, like, laying on the back getting a belly rub while I'm interviewing the congressman in the congressman's office. And you know why the dog's hang out in the congressman's office? Because Mark's got the dog treats in his office.
Of course. I thought you were going to say you interviewed a Labradoodle today or something.
Well,
or a Golden Doodle or whatever it was.
No, but it was a beautiful dog, one of the very nice staffers. And Matt and all the staff, great. And Dane back in the district of Mark Pocan. Now, I know Mark. So, Mark, I feel comfortable saying you're going to have a great experience there. Derek Van Orden's staff may offer you a drink.
Oh, you know.
Different reputation.
No. I don't know if I should disclose this. What the heck, right?
No one's listening. It's just the radio.
Right. I'm not the only one that's going there. There is four of us.
Don't give names.
From Wisconsin. Will not.
Pocan staff will be looking for you, though.
One has been to Van Horten's office before, and she was offered a beer at 9 a.m. in the morning.
That's how we do it. 2-3, dear.
Looking forward to get my 9 a.m. drink on. Yeah,
see if they got a bloody bar. Let me know. Because I might stop by if they got a bloody bar.
Yeah, I don't think they will let you in. But going tomorrow to do the advocacy work, and you know, people may be thinking, well, what does that look like? So that's where I just wanted to take a step back, because this is big, right? This is on a national level. I am here as part of the National Alliance for Caregiving, which has over...
And where's here?
Washington, D.C.
And what show are we listening to?
We are listening to The Empowered Caregiver.
And who are you?
And I am Liza Hellenbrand.
And who's the greatest guest you ever had today right now?
Harriet and Kim did a fantastic
right now,
job.
I said.
Fantastic
I
job
listened.
With
they
me
sounded
today.
Excellent.
They did. They absolutely did. But so to get back on point here. I am here on behalf of the National Alliance for Caregiving. Well, you could take it down a step further. I am actually part of the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance, which is not a secret society, let you know. Anybody can join. and they're looking for people to join. If you go to wisconsincaregiver.org, you have the opportunity there to sign up if you want to get active as well. And that's really all I did. Nobody tapped me on
my shoulder.
How long
have you been doing this, Lisa?
Actually, I am fairly new at all of this being part
new
of
like a decade. New?
Oh, well, caregiving. Yes, caregiving I have been doing for some time, but I am talking about being part of this organization. Okay. And what led me to Washington, and I have no shame. It was kind of like default. Like I was the only one that was, well, there's four of us here,
Me, Mr. Carter.
Right, right. But I'm like, I'll do it. So anyways, I want to try to explain this because when I say that I'm going to Washington to advocate for caregivers, hopefully, fingers crossed, there's a couple people in Wisconsin saying, woohoo, thank you, Liza, but what the heck does that mean? And what that means is in 2018, the RAISE Caregiver Act, I'm probably saying that wrong, but it passed into law. So what happened is 2018, there were massive amounts of people that came together on different levels. Family caregivers, you know, people off of Main Street USA, all the way up to federal workers, and they created this RAISE Council. And they came up with over 300 actions on a federal level that would help family caregivers. And then there's 150 that can be done on state and local levels, right? We need to take this approach from the top down and the down up, right? At every level. This, we can't just hand it over to the government to fix it because that's a waste of everyone's time, right? But what I'm here to do is to educate these staffers on, it's called the Act on RAISE. So this passed in 2018, these recommendations. There were five goals, all of these recommendations, and then nothing, right? So now we're in 2023, and we're having this big initiative called Act on RAISE. We need to act on this. We need to hold these people accountable. We need to get things moving, right? So we need to raise the awareness that this is out here, and this is what needs to be done to support family caregivers.
Folks, you're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show.
Thank you for that.
That is host Liza Hellenbrand. I'm very proud of her. You're a little bit of an introvert. And the fact that you have grown yourself into this role, baby, I'm very proud of you, I gotta tell you.
Thank you. I mean, I am very much of an introvert, and I'm working past it. Yeah, you know, I remember when the first time I went up to a microphone and it wasn't even on, I couldn't even whisper my name. I was Liza. You know, I didn't want to do it. And now I'm talking about this issue because it is an important issue. It impacts 53 million Americans, one out of five. Hardly anybody goes untouched by the role of caregiving.
I was completely unaware, and you know, and now your audience knows, if not before, you know, we've got a son on the autism spectrum, and we never perceived ourselves. We never talked about being caregivers per se, parents. Mm-hmm. You know, we just thought that's our lot in life, you know. But that's obviously, you raised my awareness. I mean, when I started talking to some of my colleagues at Civic Media, which is getting to be a big organization, a lot of hosts, but a lot of people, and a lot of them are in the role of caregiver. And it's amazing to me because you've opened my eyes. I didn't know. I was blissfully unaware because our son's having good outcomes. But so many people, when you talk to them, and I listened to the show, I really like the Empowered Caregiver Show and live from DC this week, but you've opened my eyes to how broadly people are affected. So what's the strategy? How are you going to move Ron Johnson, Tammy Baldwin, Derek Van Orden, or Mark Pocan, or get their staffs on board? What's the goal? What are you hoping to accomplish tomorrow?
Well, the goal tomorrow is really just to raise the awareness on this RAISE strategy that has been out there for several years, and let them know, you know, some of the key talking points. There are a few things specific to Wisconsin. Wisconsin is one of only a few states that does not have the CARE Act in place, which doesn't have anything to do with health insurance. The CARE Act allows family caregivers to be at the table, to be at the conversation with medical providers, because they're the ones that are caring for these people, right? But right now, they don't, medical providers, professionals,
yes,
don't have any obligation or responsibility really to talk to the caregivers, the ones that, and oftentimes they're dismissed. You know, when the caregiver raises their concerns or whatever, they're just whatever she's, you know, they're dismissed. But they need to have a voice and a seat at the table at these important conversations that are going on around the people that they're caring for.
Well, politics always makes interesting bedfellows, as they say. And you might be surprised to find that, like, a guy like U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, who, strangely, I know, I thought he was country club cordial. I still do in certain ways. And on certain issues, he might see things your way. He might be open-minded, or at least his team might be.
Yeah, and you know, that's where, you know, you got to know the audience that you're speaking to when you say, what am I going to say? Well,
Derek Van Orden's staff.
Thank you. He is a big veteran. He's a veteran. He's very big
Navy
into
SEAL.
Yes, very big into veterans issues.
That's true.
Lots of caregivers struggling big time to take care of veterans. I can tell you a few more things that I'm going to say to a few more people after this short break. To the Empowered Caregiver Show, and I am your your host, Liza Hellenbrand. I am joining you today live from Washington, D.C., where I am here on behalf of the Act on RAISE movement, which is run or being put on by the National Alliance for Caregiving. So there are all sorts of people in all different arenas that have come together to focus on caregiver issues and raise awareness over at the Capitol. So before break, my co-host for this last segment, Michael Crute from the Devil's Advocates, had asked me what I was going to say to these people.
What are you going to say to these people, Liza?
Well, it's a little bit scripted, but you know, we can address some Wisconsin specific issues. But like I had said, Van Orden is a veteran. And,
Derek Van Orden, yes, congressman from the 3rd Western Wisconsin.
You know, talking about veteran issues and caregiving is going to be huge. The VA has wonderful caregiving resources. They're really a leader, but it's a little hit or miss. There's some work that needs to be done on their end as well. I would say for Ron Johnson, it's going to be about the economy, right? You know, what
America needs workers.
America needs workers.
You might be surprised, though. Ron is was an advocate for Right to Try, meaning drugs. Those that are dying on the tail end, hospice end of their lives should be able to jump ahead of FDA approval on certain things. Ron Johnson might be open. He's also been a humanitarian on the, I think it's called the Nehemiah Project, which is putting prison, former prison inmates to work post-prison. And it takes teaching soft skills. And it's one of the few issues that I've always, pardon me, that I've ever admired Ron Johnson about, the Republican senior senator.
You know, I have a conspiracy theory of my own when it comes to Ron Johnson. I'm sure that deep down he's got a soft spot and he cares about people. And I will leave it at that. But, you know, that's the wonderful thing about advocating for caregivers' issues is this is really bipartisan, right? Yeah. You know, how do you...
If it affected you or affects your family, I bet... I've often thought, and I don't mean to cast my politics, but Democrats care about other people's outcomes. And Republicans really start caring when it affects their family. But when you talk about one in five families, that's a lot of Republican families that have parents that have crept into dementia or need long-term care, or, you know, if somebody gets injured in an accident, or a child is born with a disability, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, there's so many different types of caregiving out there. And one that you actually missed that has a large seat at this table is kinship and grandparents caring for grandchildren. I mean, this isn't the only reason that grandparents care for grandchildren, but sad to say, the opioid has really brought a lot of grandparents back into the parenting role. And it's not uncommon. It's hit my family personally.
Yeah, we were at a funeral last weekend.
I was at my fourth funeral for overdose.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it impacts grandparents as well. They're seen as caregivers, and they often don't have a lot of access to the resources, or even allowing them to qualify.
Empowered Caregiver Show. My lovely wife, Liza Allen Brand, I'm very proud of you here on behalf of caregivers advocating, going on Capitol Hill tomorrow. And this timing, unique. New Speaker of the House elected since you've been here. You must have brought...
I'm making change. See, I told you. I'm here to
all
make change.
All it took was Liza on D.C. on Capitol Hill. But I am proud of you, and I'm proud of this undertaking you're going to take tomorrow on Capitol Hill. And what does success look like? So when you leave D.C., and it obviously doesn't end on Friday morning, but when you leave D.C., what does ongoing success look like? How do you, if you've influenced these lawmakers, what changes come through this?
Well, there is five main goals. Like I said, there is over 300 goals that are on a federal level that they have 3 years to enact. So they're working on these right now, but it's really to raise the level of awareness. In my opinion, I think we're very much at square one still, raising the awareness that there are a lot of people struggling. There are a lot of people struggling financially, emotionally, mental health, physically, because of the demands of caregiving, and it's not sustainable. And so we need to do something about it. But I think the big thing is to increase awareness. They also want to make sure that caregivers have, like I said, a seat at the table, you know, in the federal arena and in all arenas, right? We need to have a voice. We need to have our needs heard, our concerns heard. So making sure that they acknowledge the caregiver as part of the caregiving team. Also, we need to strengthen the service and supports. The paid caregiver crisis is huge. That's probably on the forefront. There's 10 states represented today. One was Hawaii, and there they said in the next 5 years that there will be 130,000 people that will be entering, well, actually 130,000 people on wait lists for assisted living and care. So that's all going to come back to the caregiver. I could go on and on, but we're out of time. Very passionate about the subject. I will speak next week on how it went. You're listening to The Empowered Caregiver. I'm your host, Liza Hellenbrand. I know that caregiving can be challenging and difficult, but I want to let you know you absolutely positively got this.